Colonel Beaver, Reel 5.
Administration, particularly on the personnel and financial side, is of course a desperately difficult subject in any secret organization. We were more than fortunate in SOE in our financial director, a man who I'd known well before the war, John Venner, V-E-N-N-E-R, who had been a well-known chartered accountant in the city. He had exactly the right combination of insisting on principle and not fussing too much about detail. It is impossible for a man or woman in the field to keep detailed accounts. On the other hand, you must find a system which prevents reckless and extravagant spending. A second item in the SIS-SOE relationship is, of course, the bitterness felt by SIS of a new secret organization operating overseas in a manner which sometimes was bound to prejudice their own operations. And although there were other occasions where personal relations overcame the difficulties which were inevitable, there were some people on the SIS side and probably the SOE side also, who overstepped the mark. A friend of mine who was a career diplomat and was at school with me, and we knew each other well, was once acting as personal assistant to the CSS, the chief. At the same time, when I was acting as personal assistant to CD, the head of SOE. This happened to be at the time when SOE incurred its greatest disaster in the Netherlands, where the Germans penetrated the resistance movement, and many gallant Dutchmen were shot as a result. And there was an occasion at this time when a senior official of SIS came into the chief's room and said, "Today we have really good news for the first time for many months. The SOE organization in the Netherlands is completely penetrated." My friend said I could simply not believe that anybody could say such a thing. Now, anybody who knew the SIS will guess correctly who I'm referring to. But I don't think I ought to disclose his name for publication, because I mean my friend, though I know he's told the same story to somebody else, and he didn't swear me to secrecy. He told me once at a lunch, but nevertheless, I think there was an implication that he was only telling me because we'd both been in a secret organization, we'd both been in the same school together, and he would, I think, have cause for strong complaint if I had mentioned his name or the name of his colleague he was talking about.
So the SIS chap who said this wasn't saying it as some kind of sick joke, but in all seriousness.
All seriousness.
When you got back to London in June
1942,
mm-hmm. Did your SOE career cease or did it go on?
No, you see, then I first said, I now want to go up to Scotland and do a course of the things which I'm at present I can only ask other people to do, like courses of demolition and movement across country and night and God knows what. And so I went up for 2 weeks to one of the training grounds we had at Arisaig and in in Argyll. First of all, before going up to Scotland, I had work to do with H Section on the preparatory work for Operation Torch, the North African landings, on which I had been working in Lisbon along with Solborg of the OSS.
Solborg, his first name was Sol, was it?
He was R.S. Solborg, and I was trying to remember what his Christian name was. I've forgotten. I think it's Bob. I think he was Robert S. Solborg.
What was the nature of the work that you were doing with him?
We had been cooperating particularly on the problem of communications between Lisbon, Tangier, and Gibraltar. As OSS was an American organization, and the USA, unlike the UK, had diplomatic relations with the Vichy government, which was in charge of North Africa. OSS could use diplomatic communications with consulates, with US consulates, where they had a number of OSS men already in position. However, in August, I went up north to Arisaig, being the only British officer on a course which had been arranged for Polish officers who later were parachuted into Poland, the course being designed for weapon training, demolition, movement across country at night, and general physical training.
How did you take to it? How did you take to it?
I thought it was well conceived, and enjoyed it, and have always been glad that although I never went into enemy occupied territory, at least I knew something of what happened to those of British officers who had the necessary language qualifications and were working in country suitable for guerrilla warfare. There were two British instructors who were first class. One of them, Gavin Maxwell, later well known as the author of books on wildlife, the other instructor, was later recruited for the North African landings and was killed in November of that year at Oran. I cannot remember his name.
Never mind.
It was an exhausting course, and as sometimes happens in the north of Scotland, we worked in continuous rain for 13 out of 14 days. There was therefore a tendency for even the youngest and most energetic to drop off during a lecture. And the lecturer had an excellent weapon to remedy this in the form of a demolition charge outside the window, which he could touch off when he detected anybody showing a tendency to go to sleep.